I'm Scott Paul, and this is the Manufacturing Report.
There was something about walking into that factory empty with these machines that had that same feeling that those machines were humming a few days ago, and things were being made, things were being produced in the way that Americans can produce stuff like nobody's business. And now it's dark and empty and closed and shut, but you can still feel that energy in that space.
I'm Scott Paul, and this is the Manufacturing Report. Today's episode is pretty special for a number of reasons. First of all, we've got a manufacturing film to talk about that should go straight to the top of your watch list, the movie Working Man, if you haven't already seen it. But we're also privileged to be able to share insights from the cast and crew, including the actor Peter Garrity. You may have seen him in The Wire on HBO, and also Talia Shire from the iconic movie Rocky, and also The Godfather. They spent weeks together in an operational factory filming Working Man and studying the life of factory communities. Peter Garrity plays the role of Allery Parks, who is suddenly left without purpose when the plastics factory where he has worked for decades closes. Meanwhile, Allery's wife, Iola, played by Talia Shire, grapples with the emotional consequences that her husband attempts to stifle as he and a charismatic fellow worker, played by Billy Brown, return to the plant each day in an attempt to fulfill the remaining orders and revive the factory. My conversation with the actor Peter Garrity, followed by my interview with the actress Talia Shire, next. Peter, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Scott.
So your character, Allery, I just wanted to say when we started this, was a familiar person to many of the former factory workers I talked to. In the sense that when they lost their job, it felt like they lost the sense of their identity. They had restlessness. They couldn't figure out what to do. They wanted to go back to the factory.
Yeah.
And they couldn't. And so I'm wondering, because I think this is such an interesting part of Allery's character, he was highly motivated to get up and to do something and to get back in there.
I think you could look at it that way. I think there's several different ways of looking at it. You know, it's funny for actors that get onto a role where they feel passionate about the role, and a lot of actors will try to define what it is that makes this character tick. And in my case, I think that not knowing was almost as important to me as the knowing would have been. I felt that the mental illness, the psychological illness that Allery and even his wife Iola have because of previous shocks.
Right.
And that have gone unuttered. We don't talk about them. And so there's this deep well of not just sadness, but a feeling of loss of identity already.
Yeah.
So that when the factory closes down, and you know, you just think, if in a town where maybe there were 50 factories or, you know, 25 factories or something, and then over a period of a generation, the factories start diminishing. Like you were talking about Providence, Rhode Island earlier.
Yes.
Where I come from. And even as a kid growing up in Providence, which is a real, I love Providence. It's a real blue collar town, you know, and growing up there, I was very aware of not so much specific factories closing, but of kind of a loss of economy. People would talk about this jewelry factory closing or that jewelry factory closing. And I could sense that there was a real problem with that. So, you know, that there was a psychological problem with that.
Mm.
When you take the loss of jobs and then you add that to a mental weakness or an illness.
Right.
That is underpinning the life. I mean, that's just compounding that loss of self and that loss of identity. And what do you do? If men or women, I mean, now women are undergoing the same dislocation that men were, but back in the day, it was more men. that were undergoing it. And what do you do if you're the man who's the breadwinner of a family and you've got kids at home and a wife at home and a mortgage to maintain and you see factories closing? I mean, even before yours does.
Yeah.
What do you do when you see this disappearance of an entire economy? I mean, I'm totally in favor of renewable energy, for instance. But my heart goes out to the coal miners in West Virginia who just see the end of a way of life coming towards them, and they don't want it. And never mind, don't talk to me about the rationale of whether or not the earth is getting warmer and the climate is changing and we need to do something about it because we're intelligent human beings. Never mind that. I can see coming down the road that I'm going to have a hard time putting food on the table for my kids. That's the immediate problem. So all I'm saying here is that all of these factory workers in these various industries in the town that the movie is set in, that Working Man is set in, all of those factory workers, they could see it coming.
Yeah.
Like a monster coming over the hill or a tidal wave or something. They could see it coming. And so when it actually happens, oh my God, I mean, when our factory closes and, you know, they've got that line about, we don't want that old geriatric sitting around here. We got to get him out. And so finally they get me out.
Right.
And then there's a couple of scenes where I'm home and Iola is serving me breakfast or she's making me a sandwich or something, or I'm sitting in front of the television set. And these scenes are like very brief, maybe 5 seconds long or something. But you can see the loss of energy. You can see the energy, not that Allery has a lot of energy to begin with, but you can see the energy going out of Allery like somebody opened the drain on a bathtub and it's just flowing out.
Yeah.
And there's an emptiness there. So when Allery gets up out of that and just puts on his uniform and his shirt and his coat and makes his hopeless little Braunschweiger sandwich,
right,
and heads out the door and walks haltingly toward the factory, not even knowing what he's going to do. See, that's what I meant about when I was saying earlier, as an actor, in a way, I didn't want to define it too much. I wanted the not knowing to be present and accounted for, because I don't think Allery knew. Allery doesn't know what he's doing. He's operating out of instinct and out of a sense of loss that's so deep, Allery doesn't have words for it.
It almost seemed like as he was meandering, he was running into a lot of dead ends, like there was nothing for him in the house, goes by the unemployment office, there's nothing for him there. And you're right, it didn't seem like he had a plan. And I do want to say again, for the factory workers I've spoken to who have seen the film, it is entirely relatable to them. They said, I felt the same way, which was extraordinary. And you capture this in the fictional town of Orridge. And the extraordinary thing about this is that we've seen this deindustrialization across America. I mean, 55,000 factories shuttered their doors over the last couple of decades. And so you imagine that playing out on a level. Like you, I am very glad that Bob Jury was able to bring this to life. I'm also from a small town in the Midwest that saw deindustrialization. So it really, really strikes a chord. And one of the things I wanted to ask you to follow up is that you eventually get back to the factory, or Allery does. And I'm wondering what it was like for you as a very gifted actor.
Thank you.
To spend that amount of time among these machines that I think to a lot of people, and even on film, feel more alien than space creatures, because you just don't see them. You just don't see them. And so I'm wondering what that was like.
I loved it. I just loved it. You know, I mean, just when we were filming, even before, Walter got involved, before Bill Brown got involved, even before that, when it was just me, and there I am in these giant machines. I just loved it. I think when I was a young man, before I became an actor, like maybe when I was a teenager, or summer college work, I think I did get a little bit of, I didn't work in a factory, but I think I had a friend that worked in a factory and I went to visit him. There was just something that was so familiar about it. And then when you're alone, I mean, yeah, there's a small film crew there and wonderful Piero Bassa doing incredible lighting and cinematography. And there you are alone with these giant machines and trying to figure out how to behave as if you knew what the hell you were doing, as if these machines that look like, you know, some creature out of Alien or something.
Yeah.
You know, you're wondering whether Sigourney Weaver is going to come out behind you. And, you know, and you're trying to figure out how to behave as if you knew what you were doing, what buttons to push. And what does this machine do exactly? And it turns out they're plastic machines, and you put in the raw plastic material in this huge funnel at the top. And so at one time I rolled a big ladder, one of those tall, tall ladders on wheels, and I rolled it over to my machine, and I scampered up the ladder. Well, Bob Jury had a fit. I mean, he was scared stiff because I... You know, I just turned 80. I'm 80 years old, right? And I have a couple of aluminum or titanium parts in my body. And he was suddenly, oh, my God, he's afraid I'm going. But I used to be a lighting guy in the theater back when I was a young actor. And I was a lighting guy at the beginning. And I used to scamper up ladders all the time. So I'm at home with that. And I dragged this pot of plastic up to the top of my machine, and I threw the plastic into this funnel at the top of the machine, and that's what you were supposed to do.
Yeah.
And then I came down, and suddenly I'm working the damn thing, and it feels like, okay, I've been doing this for 40 years. There's just something wonderful about it. I'll tell you one just kind of psychological thing that happens to a lot of actors, particularly stage actors, is that when you're in a theater and the theater is full of 1,000 people and they're laughing or they're crying or they're scared or whatever the piece of theater is bringing to their emotional life. And then they go, they applaud and you take your bows, blah, blah, blah. You go up to the dressing room, you take your makeup off, you come back down through the theater on your way out. And very often an actor will walk out onto the empty stage where there's nothing but one light on the stage, which they call the ghost light. Mm. And there you are in the middle of this space that only a half an hour ago or 15 minutes ago was full of 1,000 people cheering or laughing or crying. And somehow the energy of that experience is still in the room.
Mm.
And the room is dark and empty with the ghost light, and there you are alone on the stage. And there was something about walking into that factory, empty, with these machines that had that same feeling that those machines were humming.
Yeah.
A few days ago. And things were being made. Things were being produced in the way that Americans can produce stuff, like nobody's business. And now it's dark and empty and closed and shut, but you can still feel that energy in that space.
You've captured it perfectly. I will just say the scene that encapsulates that, kind of the rebirth of that, is the beautiful classical music score when everybody is back at the factory and you're literally making a symphony together. It was a really joyous moment to see, and I think for all the, I'll affectionately call them gearheads out there, they're going to respond incredibly well to that as well. I wanted to ask you, because there's a lot of very sparse but memorable lines that I think Allery has in this film that you project incredibly well. And one of them is when he's interviewed, and people who see the film will understand he's a man of few words, right? Just says, I just want to do my job. Didn't have to provide any other rationale. And then there's just cheers. And I have to say, I cheered at home.
And
It was one of those moments where I think it really, really connects with, as you said, our American ethos.
Right. Human beings are workers. But America, I mean, you know, we built this country from the ground up on the backs of a lot of pain, but we built it.
Yeah.
And just to know that the exceptional energy and can-do spirit is so alive in the American psyche. And when something blocks that, when something foreign comes along and creates a wall that blocks that energy and that can-do spirit, it's a real trauma.
Mm.
I mean, the American psyche, I think, is going through a trauma these days. And the difficulty is always, whether you're talking in the personal regeneration of a family, for instance, or a relationship or a country, it almost doesn't matter because change is painful. But if you've ever had a problem with a relationship, or if you've ever had a problem in a family or anything, you know that change may be painful, but change needs to be husbanded through. You got to go through it, and you got to make the change in a creative, intelligent way. Mm. I mean, we have that power as a country to do that. You know, I feel tremendous pain for the workers that lose their jobs. I've seen it. My brother's family are all out in rural Illinois.
Mm.
And it's a fairly large family. And they are all going through the same dislocation. And it's really painful for them. And I love them. And I don't want them to feel that pain. But I also know that there's, to a certain extent, I mean, whatever that, you know, it's a fictional town, right? But whatever the reality of the town that has however many, 10, 15 factories, and then 14, and then 13, and then 10, and you can see it happening, and there's anger, and there's hurt, and there's pain there, and there's fear, a lot of fear about what happens to us now. And I just, you know, I think that the movie talks to that really well. I mean, this is another movie. This is a different movie. But somehow we have to find a way of furthering our national life, furthering our life that provides jobs and an income for people, but that, you know, because those jobs aren't coming back. And to me, reality beats fantasy any day of the week. I want to understand and know, as painful as it is, that those jobs aren't coming back. And okay, now what do we do? Because we have that can do intelligence and energy and spirit as a nation. So whatever it is that's going to replace what's being lost, we can do it better than anybody.
Right. And Peter, as you inferred, like, what's our industrial policy for renewable energy so that we are a mass producer of this?
Right.
And that is kind of absent from the political conversation today. Well, I will say, with respect, you are an incredibly spry octogenarian, and both the climbing the ladder, but also the rigors of shooting a movie in such a brief amount of time as well. That's some incredible work. It's a memorable work.
Thank you, sir.
Peter, thank you so much for your time today. Be well. I also had the opportunity to speak with Talia Shire, who played the role of Allery's wife, Iola. She is acutely aware of the psychological trauma that haunts Allery and unfurls as the new Liberty Plastics factory closes. Talia Shire, welcome to the podcast.
Scott, thank you for having me.
I wanted to first thank you for both the time that you're spending with us and also for acting this great character, Iola Parks, in the movie Working Man. I'm wondering from your perspective, I mean, you've been an actor, I think, all of your adult life. You've had some very famous roles. One thing that was interesting to me about this is that it sounds like you got to spend an intense amount of time in a factory, both like kind of living, sleeping, working there. And I'm just wondering what that was like for you.
They were very generous. That factory, my dressing room was in somebody's office. So, you know, we were collected there together and they were incredibly kind. I love the energy. And there's tremendous energy in a factory. It's a place of doing. And it is also a community. And I didn't get to work on any of the machines because they know that I am clumsy, but they kept me away from, because I would break the machines. But I was fascinated with the, and I've always been, because I've often said that Hollywood is a factory town. There is that same sense of, you know, you come to work early in the morning, everybody does their thing. It's very much a factory. We just manufacture dreams. A little bit different, but very necessary.
You know, I completely agree. And one of the things that struck me about this story, and we'll get into the characters as well, was that, you know, this was obviously a story about loss in many ways. And
yes,
one of these losses was the factory. And you may or may not know this, but in America over the last couple of decades, we've lost like 55,000 factories. And so I imagine these stories taking place all around the country in towns like this. And I know that you said, you know, from your perspective in the entertainment industry, that you've seen, obviously, that's been dramatically altered as well and destroyed and recreated in a lot of ways. I'm wondering if you had thought about that at all in that particular experience, because there are not, quite honestly, a lot of pieces of work or films about factory closures like this.
You know, years ago, I remember they did Clash by Night, Barbara Stanwyck. That was the factory that dealt with fish. Then there was the great Montgomery Clift, Elizabeth Taylor movie. They made swimsuits. That was back in the 50s. And how a town is, it's really a community. It wraps itself around its factories. You know, it goes out, it has picnics, but I'm way older than you, Scott, but I'm going to say something to you, okay? Years ago, there was a show on television called The Life of Riley. I don't know, William Bendix. And they were best friend guys, and they worked at a factory, and they had their lunch pails. And I was fascinated with it as a child. I loved that sense of America's myth and the fact that they were so proud of making a product, but also how their families were part of the system. So when factories closed down, right, towns closed down, all those other things go down the drain. Certainly in Hollywood, I've seen that happen, you know, as well.
Sure.
But I cannot tell you how I feel about this. I think you must bring manufacturing back to America. You must do it. I mean, does everybody need all that profit? It's ridiculous. Pay everybody the fair and just wage, create these great communities again. They're critical to the health and well-being of this country.
Well, that's music to our ears, obviously. And I think this film and, you know, Robert Jury for creating it and you and the other actors for bringing it to life will really help in that effort and show that these workers have built something, and something extraordinary, and through no fault of their own, and as you mentioned, kind of like some greed, they're going to be out of a job and their lives are completely disrupted. And so this is the question I wanted to ask you about, I think, Iola's character, is that clearly the loss of Valerie's job is devastating. And we know that from just talking to factory workers, the kinds of impacts that has on their social fabric, their mental health, their well-being. It's extraordinary. There's also another loss that Iola and Allery have suffered in this movie. And I'm wondering, for you, the characters seem to get towards that there's going to be some breaking point. And maybe Allery was trying to bring something back through returning to the factory that you all couldn't bring back, this other devastating and tragic loss that you suffered.
I think, you know, what you're saying and the audience, there is a complexity to these characters and there is another loss. But I would say that the personal loss they have suffered with their child and the factory, you could use the word needless, a needless loss because of misunderstandings or miscommunications. You know, a factory, that was a needless loss. And they do lose because we have mental health issues here.
Right.
In our story, what my husband, Peter Garrity, brilliant actor, plays, not as just keeping the factory open because of a conscious zeal, but also because he is avoiding this other loss. It becomes the elephant in that room. It's a kind of purgatory, which was fascinating when I read this piece that Robert Turi wrote. Was fascinating to read on the page because you're turning the pages and you're saying, well, this is, what is he? The factory's closed down, but this man gets up, he makes his lunch, he's going to work every single day, right? So in part, he's doing a penance, and that penance is transformed by Billy Brown. What an actor. He's a terrific actor. That, again, is the uniqueness of this piece. Billy Brown is a kind of angelic force who recognizes, maybe not the reasons why, we call that subtext, that our character is continually doing this penance, but he sees something brilliant, and he's able to transform it and gather the workers around. And yes, they reopen that factory. They do it. And it is, I cheered. I cheered when he puts those flashlights on. I go, yes, yes, yes. But I also understood that the other story in this piece is maybe now our character, Allery, will be empowered, and together he and his wife could face the loss of their child. But that is the other story. And that is what is so extraordinary about that piece. And it has great audacity, that our writer and director did those two stories together, and it works.
Right. The aspects of reconciliation are, I think, truly extraordinary. As you mentioned, on the dual tracks, with the personal loss and the loss of the job. And I will say, I also cheered when everybody came back into the factory as well and was literally making music with the machines. It was a pretty wonderful scene. And it reminded me, in a way, there's a story from this COVID-19 pandemic of workers who stayed overnight at their factory for 28 straight days to make personal protective equipment for healthcare workers, because it was their duty to do it. And I think that's the thing that struck me, is like, we have a job to return to. And so, Talia, I wanted to ask you, because one of the interesting things I think about Iola's characters, to me, initially, she seems very withdrawn and kind of slowly dying after suffering this obviously very tragic loss, and is suspicious of change or of strangers or of things that are unfamiliar. But it seems to me by the end of the film, there has been this evolution. And I'm wondering if you could speak to that.
Well, Allery and Iola had a talented son, a musician, and it's spoken about in the town, but it's not really spoken about between the father and mother.
Right.
And in a way, Allery is enough empowered by the event of the opening of the factory that they can finally, as the factory has a right to come alive, right? Being alive, you also have to, you have to face these other issues of life and death, of evolution, of things that go unsaid. You know, and everybody just takes their play. So it's, I mean, I have to go back to this. Forgive me, I do, because it's such a unique piece of film construction. How is it a factory reopening with kind of the might and zeal of Billy promoting this really be able to help this couple deal with the loss of a child? But I don't know, but it works, right?
Right.
And I think that the town, and because we forget this, that workers in a town are alive and they are a community. I once heard the best definition of a community is you're responsible to yourself and one other person. Now, that's a definition of a marriage. If you expand that, right, that's your union. That's right, your that's it. I'm going to be responsible for myself and for these others. But it does enable together this great, I went off your question, forgive me, I became a little passionate, because it's such a unique construction, and it works, it absolutely works. And Billy, the angelic force that I feel, and you're right, Iola is suspicious. She is suspicious because when that boy died, and he died by his own unhappiness, and we're talking now about mental health issues, because it becomes so unsaid, doesn't mean that this event isn't collecting interest in her own soul. And because she must in some way stay alive and not die along needlessly with the factory and her child. So she's suspicious, but she does recognize, which is so fascinating, in Billy Brown's character, her own son.
Mm-hmm.
Her own son. And that, you know what, we have got to protect him. And to her husband, she is saying, you have got to embrace this man who helped to reopen this factory. Because that is the obligation of fathers and sons. And we missed out on our son, but we're not going to do it here. Anyway, so I did go off on your question, but I don't care.
You answered it really well, I think, because there was this perfectly natural and very relatable reluctance to reengage, and also that recognition as well. But at the end, it was this sense of, I mean, I love the ending scene, the dancing back at the supper club, which was just such a perfect cherry on top for everything.
They are a new couple. They are both going to do this extraordinary thing, which is live their life, because that is the greatest gift. When you have loss, you can't bury yourself with the loss. You must live. Life is a big mystery, but boy, you got to give it your best shot, you know?
You sure do. So I guess in closing, one of the things that I wanted to ask you, Taya, is that clearly this role spoke to you in some way. And it is, again, I think a really, really intricate story. The people at the center of it are fundamentally working class. And not only that, but working class in manufacturing. And you mentioned some TV shows from many decades ago, which was kind of the golden era of manufacturing. And today, when you see a factory, often it's in like an action movie where there's a scene set in an abandoned factory and there's chains and rust and dripping water and all of this. In a lot of ways, even though this factory is eventually going to turn into something else, there is this rebirth or this sense of hope or this renaissance. And I want to, I guess this is more of a statement than a question, but I want to thank you for kind of elevating the working class and blue collar work through this. I think it's an extraordinary thing.
Well, but you know, I think the mistake we make, and I feel about this passionately, and you'll hear a touch of the mystic in me coming out, is that we have an outer life. We get up, we have a job, we feed our family, we have a routine, but we have an inner life. I mean, we are a spirit and a soul. The working class, right, that does those jobs also has an inner life. They read, they think, they feel. And I have to say this, we are in a moment of great evolution. So we're going to have all sorts of new robots or robotic things.
Yeah.
That is not the enemy. That's not the enemy of evolution. It is more and more the opportunity for everyone to make their inner life spectacular, right? You're always going to need humanity. You're always going to need that spirit and that energy. And you can't be afraid of going forward. Now, my oldest brother, who passed away, was this terrific educator, was the Dean of Creative Arts at San Francisco State. And I will tell you, if you want to fix most things, it's all through education. You want to move into this new age and be a factory worker, which is to be proud and hold your head up. Yes, but you also can enjoy all these other spectacular things that an inner life gives you, right?
Absolutely.
You want to deal with reform? Yes, it's education. You want climate change? Because it's about education. So I think what I feel and see is you cannot lose the community. We must not lose the community, but we can't go backwards. We must go forward, even though we're going to have a lot of anxiety, and embrace what this new stuff is. And you know, as I said to you before, Hollywood's a factory. We do the same thing. And all of a sudden, musicians have no job because a synthesizer, you know. Well, I tell you, the sound sounds worse. But we can go forward if we embrace the humanity and the human spirit that we have, all of us across the board.
Well said. I couldn't think of a better way to conclude the podcast.
We are in transformational times.
Yes, absolutely.
We misinterpret transformation because we're uncomfortable. We haven't built a new self, okay? We are sort of all empty nesters, if you will. But we have something, I mean, it's a statement again, we have something in us. Never, never, never not embrace the human spirit and the ability to go forward in transformational times. I don't care what color you may be. My goodness gracious, that's the brilliance of America. We can come together, go forward, and we're all afraid, but we can do it. You know, and it plays out the factory, and I really mean this, the factory is a community.
Yeah.
I don't want to lose my community.
Yeah. You hit it there because it was a community. People didn't see each other through black, white, or brown, or male or female, or anything, any other of those divisions at all.
Yes, yes.
It was a true community.
Without question. And people who bust their buns, right? And I consider musicians doing, and actors. We all know about the human spirit. We absolutely do. And we believe that we could go forward in these strange times because we're incredibly creative, all of us. So, I mean, I just have to say I have such respect. And I want to see manufacturing come back, but go forward. Come back and go forward because we do have the capacity to go forward.
Well put. We struggle for days trying to figure out something like that, and you just gave it to us, Taya. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right.
Taya Shire, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
It was my pleasure.
And that will do it for the Manufacturing Report this week, but we're continuing our exploration of Working Man in further conversations with the cast and crew. You've got to tune in for our next episode to hear what Billy Brown, who portrayed Walter Brewer in the film, has to say. And if you haven't already seen Working Man, you can stream it on Amazon Prime, Apple TV, Google Play, Vudu, and Fandango. As always, I want to thank AAM staff and Kat Adams for their great work to make this episode possible. And I also want to thank you, the listeners, for engaging with us and for also giving us some great episode ideas. Please be sure to subscribe to the Manufacturing Report on Spotify or wherever you find your podcasts. And also let us know what you think by leaving a review and a rating. You can find us online at AmericanManufacturing.org. You can follow us on Facebook or Instagram, and you can always connect with us on Twitter at KeepItMadeInUSA. I'm Scott Paul, and until next time, together, we can keep it made in America.